Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Seems like a lot of Georgia fans have been playing the waiting game as of late. Obviously, Georgia still celebrating the fact that it had the number one overall recruiting class in 2024. Kind of the hay got put in the barn officially on that a few weeks ago, sort of the final kind of national signing day in February. Old school, you don't really do much on that anymore, but that was kind of the lid for Georgia on that 2024 recruiting class, and it kind of clinched that number one class for UGA. And now as the weather warms up, as has been the tradition the last few years, this is also the time in which recruiting starts to heat up a little bit as well. And as you move towards the start of the summer, that's really become the epicenter, if you will, for when recruiting classes come together. And for a lot of Georgia fans, while they're still really, really happy about what Georgia did in 2024 and thrilled about the fact that so many of those guys are already on campus, really the entirety of the class almost, going through spring practice, some of them slated to perhaps be significant contributors almost right away, while Georgia fans are still loving them. There's also that kind of pins and needles nature of, okay, what's next? And that's always been the number one question that every Georgia fan asks after you get the big commitment. Hey, what's next? And after the 2024 class is put away, that sort of what next mentality exists for Georgia for the class of 2025 there too, because it seems like you've been kind of lying in the weeds here a little bit, waiting for the next big domino to fall. But we certainly believe that in the coming weeks and perhaps the coming months, a lot of those dominoes are going to start to fall. In fact, this weekend, I think we may look back on that and say, hey, that's the spot where the momentum started to spin. That's the moment in which some big things started to go down for Georgia. We talked to Jeff Sintel about this on Friday, our Dog Nation recruiting insider. And one of the words that Jeff Sintel used in that interview, and if you go back to listen to it at dognation.com, you can hear this, is the idea of we sort of might be at a little bit of a crossroads here, where some really big names are to choose either between Georgia and somewhere else, or perhaps in some cases, Georgia going to decide, are we going to go all in on this guy, or are we going to perhaps maybe cast a little bit of a wider net and maybe not quite be so specific about an individual name? Those are the decisions that are being made right now. Players making a decision about what's best for them, Georgia making its own decisions about where its priorities are going to lie. And perhaps when you think about what has happened since you and I last spoke on Friday, the biggest thing to occur was the visit that David Sanders, the five-star offensive lineman out of North Carolina, that he took to Georgia on Saturday. The sense that you get, this was a good experience for him, and Georgia needing to provide a good experience for Sanders is probably pretty important, given the fact that right now, of the elite sort of, you know, very high four-star, five-star names that are out there, perhaps Sanders represents, and this is, you know, a tough case to make, but perhaps arguably it's true, the most contested recruitment currently out there for Georgia Sanders because of the pursuit that he's getting from another suitor not too far up the road from where Georgia's located. In fact, sort of set the stage for all of this, let's go back and hear Jeff on Friday talking about, as he describes it, the war that's about to take place for Sanders recruitment. Take a listen to this.
The huge name this weekend, Brandon, is David Sanders Jr. Man, that's just going to be a war. We've talked about this before. We devoted a lead segment on Before the Hedges to it about a week ago, where Georgia and Clemson, David Sanders saw Clemson first over the past weekend, and now he's going to go see Georgia. And David actually told me, Brandon, that he feels this visit to Georgia this weekend, where he sees spring practice and he watches Coach Searles coach his dogs and how the dogs respond to Coach Searles, and just really, really wades into the waters of a Georgia practice to see if that's for him, if that's what he needs, if that's a good fit. He told me that he thought that was going to be more important to him with sizing up Georgia, a Georgia program that's already checked every box for him, to see how big of a fit that is. That's a more important visit this weekend for David Sanders Jr. and his family than the official that's going to come this summer.
I want to park on that just for a minute. It sort of seems like we're still early days of the 2025 class. Obviously, signing period doesn't begin until the end of the calendar year. But what Jeff says is that this weekend, the visit that Sanders took to Georgia on Saturday, was going to be as pivotal a moment for him as anything that would come later on in the summer when you sort of think about it being kind of decision time. Jeff says it's actually this visit to sort of see this practice taking place, to see how Stacey Sarles is working, to sort of feel the vibe around Georgia. That's perhaps, as Jeff describes it, more important than anything that's going to come for him after the fact. Now, every intention or every sort of piece of evidence we have suggests that the visit for Sanders this past weekend did go really, really well, that Georgia did have that chance to make the positive impact. My guess is Jeff Sintel will be writing more about this very soon there at DogNation.com on that very point. But to sort of accentuate why this matters and why, as Jeff described, this particular weekend going to be so important, because right now you do have that hot pursuit by Clemson and a name that Georgia fans know well, Matt Luke, now as the Clemson offensive line coach. The backstory here being, this is the one area in which Clemson has not recruited well. They have not brought in offensive linemen at the same rate that in the past they brought in defensive linemen, or at times they brought in high-profile quarterbacks. Offensive line has always kind of lagged behind. In the presence of Matt Luke and the experience he got recruiting at Georgia, that's one of the things that Dabo Swinney's trying to do to change that. They've had a couple of opportunities recently to have David Sanders up there in the upstate and impress him while on campus and sort of accentuate the point of why, as Jeff describes, the visit that Sanders took to Georgia was so crucial. Let me show you this from Steve Wiltfong from 24/7 Sports on Twitter, or X, I guess we call it now, describing just the other day about the visit that Sanders takes to Clemson. And the quote that Sanders gave Wiltfong, the national reporter, about that visit to Clemson just a few days ago: "The main thing I wanted to get out of the visit was seeing Coach Luke in action. It was a sight to see," Sanders says. Obviously, Georgia fans know Luke well. David Sanders goes on to tell 24/7 Sports, "That really impressed me the most, just the way the guys worked and responded to his coaching style." So that's the sort of A-B test that's going on for David Sanders right now. Got a chance to see Matt Luke to see how he works. Gets a chance to see Stacey Searles on Saturday and see how he works and how that full padded practice for the first time in the 2024 spring to sort of see what that's like. And we'll have our ear to the ground to listen about more about kind of how the impact that George was able to make on David Sanders. Early indication was it seems like that went pretty well. Now, that's not the only kind of major moment for Georgia in the 2025 class playing out right now. In addition to a guy like Sanders perhaps choosing between Georgia and Clemson, you've also got a big choice that's out there as it relates to five-star quarterback Julian "Juju" Lewis. And at one point in time, it seemed like, you know, and you want to go back to when, you know, Lewis first announced his commitment to USC, or when some of the chatter about, you know, him being a 2026 recruit at one point in time, it sort of seems like Georgia was very much on the outside looking in of Lewis's recruitment. But ever since Lewis kind of reclassified himself as a 2025, it feels like the vibe around Georgia and Lewis has been a little bit different. And perhaps Georgia is a little bit more of a factor in the Lewis recruitment than it otherwise was. In fact, going back to Friday once again, Jeff Sintel saying that there really is behind the scenes some belief that some momentum might be growing with UGA and Juju, who's perhaps the most talked about recruit in the country right now, regardless of class. A reminder of what Jeff said for us there on Friday.
There's some indications that Julian is at least considering it. The flip to Georgia, he's talking to Georgia commitments. He's talking to wide receiver targets across the country, where they're trying on the shoe, I guess. They're trying to test drive out about everybody playing together. And that's something that I think is significant. Of course, he had a great visit to see Georgia practice yesterday because Georgia was getting after it. You heard about how Mike Bobo was really, really chippy. James Coley was really chippy, really coaching the guys hard, getting them ready. Coach Smart obviously had some Ivory Soap moments while he was over the microphone as well. So I don't expect any visit to Georgia, especially with a recruit like Julian, to go bad, but the culture was really important.
So Jeff describes there the fact that the Lewis visit apparently went well. We also have some tangible evidence to back up what Jeff says, because shortly after the unofficial visit that Lewis took this weekend, the second he's taken since reclassifying, if I'm counting correctly, we have some tangible evidence to suggest that visit must have gone well, because shortly after that, Julian "Juju" Lewis, and we'll show this on the screen for you, has already kind of punched his ticket for an official visit to Georgia right there, final day of May, kind of stretching into the very beginning of June, that weekend sort of overlapping the end of May to begin the month of June, which has become historically sort of the biggest weekend, you know, for official visits for Georgia and a lot of other programs there as well. That's when Julian Juju Lewis is going to be on campus. And it seems like right now for Georgia, this is a very real possibility. I'd also go back to the word that Jeff used on our show on Friday. You got a little bit of a crossroads situation here for Georgia because you know the backstory. Last year, Georgia goes all the way to the end with Dylan Raiola, only to lose Raiola sort of at the last minute. Georgia kind of went all in on Arch Manning the year before in the belief that they had a very good shot of winning that recruitment. Ultimately, that didn't happen. So Georgia has gone after the biggest possible trophy at the quarterback spot the last two recruiting cycles and come up maybe just a little bit short on both guys. Is it ready to do that again, take that risk for a guy like Julian Juju Lewis? Or is perhaps a guy like Matt Zollers, who is a very good prospect in his own right and perhaps a little bit more accessible, perhaps a little bit more attainable without the very difficult needle to thread that might be the Lewis recruitment? That's part of the overall decision that Georgia's making here right now. But the one takeaway is that the ball might be somewhat in Georgia's court on this, because it certainly seems like right now the idea of flipping Lewis away from USC, to the extent that he's even still considered a USC commit, that is a very real possibility for Georgia. Now, let me sort of wrap up all of this way, because when you read what Jeff's going to be writing and when you listen to what the social media chatter is and sort of what the online, you know, folks are saying, I think it can be a little bit difficult to process all of this and sort of figure out what it all means. So let me tell you what I think all of this means here for right now. We are at a time in college football where it just seems like chaos abounds. There's change coming left and right. Many of us believe a lot of that change may not always be change for the better. And there are some programs who are perhaps having a hard time keeping up. They're sort of caught up in the change. They are perhaps swallowed up by the change. And there are a lot of programs sort of figuring out, can we still be what we were in this new age of college football? Well, in Georgia's case right now, the best almost any of us can tell, that's not what's going on. There is chaos in college football, but for the most part, Georgia is not a participant in it. And this recruiting weekend for UGA feels very similar to what a recruiting weekend would have felt like a year ago or 5 years ago or when Kirby Smart first started. That somehow, some way, Georgia is able to maintain a business-as-usual mindset in a recruiting weekend like this, even though the landscape around recruiting could never be more different than it currently is. And if you're a Georgia fan, I think you need to view that as a very good thing, because business as usual for UGA is a great thing to think of when business has been as good as it continues to be for these dogs. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We're happy to have you with us today, no matter how you get to us, live on video across all platforms at 10 a.m., radio, Athens Sports Radio, 960 Ref, podcasts, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. You click in there at Apple, you click in there at Spotify, you're part of our podcast. It sort of lands right there for you by noon every day, and you're glad, hopefully, to have that. We're certainly glad to have you with us for it. And a big thanks to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia, who make this show possible for you there today, there as well. Energy efficient windows and doors, that is what Pella Window and Door of Georgia is all about. We're kind of coming up on that time of year in which the air conditioning units are on, and you know how expensive that can be, especially these days, it seems. And obviously, when your energy bills are sort of getting higher and higher and higher, you're kind of thinking about, what can I do to kind of give myself a little bit of a break in terms of some of that cost? Is there a decision I can make that maybe can help save me some money on my energy bills? Well, that's where the energy efficient windows and doors of Pella Window and Door of Georgia comes into play. It's not only a great way to take care of what might be the number one investment in your life, your own home, where you live, you know, your source of your financial, you know, investment, but it's also just a great way to be comfortable on the inside of your home, knowing that AC that you're paying so much for is not, you know, escaping out of the house because improperly fitted or just, you know, inferior product of windows and doors. No, with the Pella windows and doors, you're going to stay comfortable on the inside. You're going to be looking great on the outside. And that's why you want to have a conversation with one of those Pella experts today. You can stop by and see them at their Experience Center right there in Duluth. And you can kind of put your hands on the product and sort of feel what makes it different. Or you can give them a call, 678-638-1429, 678-638-1429. Call them and say, hey, come to me. come bring one of those Pella experts to my home. Sit down. It's no pressure consultation, just a chance to learn everything that Pella can provide for you. You can also find them online, PellaofGA.com/DogNation. That's PellaofGA.com/DogNation. Just let them tell you about great savings right now. Between now and the end of the month, you can get 20% off your project or no money down, no interest, no payments for 12 months. Also, just make sure you tell them the BA from Dog Nation Daily sent you to them and that I said they would take great care of you, because I truly know they will, because I truly know that Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. We've got John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Good, fun conversation to have with John here, especially when you think about a elite recruit kind of choosing between a Matt Luke, choosing between a Stacey Searles, which of these two offensive line coaches running the better spring practice here right now. Kind of a fascinating deliberation perhaps taking place in the mind of a prospect like a David Sanders and others there as well. So we'll talk more to John Stinchcomb about that here coming up in just a moment. Prior to that, though, I want to go around the doghouse. Poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And, of course, y'all know how much I love having Dr. Pepper a part of what we're doing here at Dog Nation Daily. And I want to go back and kind of follow up on a story that I believe we talked about on Friday. We gave you a little nugget from a practice report that Connor Riley had written at DogNation.com. And at the time, I told you, let's put a pin in this and come back to it. Well, the moment we're going to come back to is here right now on Around the Doghouse, poured by Dr. Pepper. Connor writing about Mikael Williams, but the blurb about Williams also included something else. So what Connor wrote is, Mikael Williams was bouncing around between outside linebacker and defensive line. He said as much during his interview on Tuesday, essentially confirming that's what he would do. But Connor Riley also wrote at Dog Nation that he was joined by another member of the team, the five-star freshman Joseph Jones-Ajanye, who is also going from drill to drill with Mikael Williams. Connor says that Jones-Ajanye's size really stands out for someone who's only 17 years old. Now, for me, and honestly, maybe we'll ask Connor about this tomorrow or Mike when he joins us on Wednesday, for the people in Athens, how surprised they may have been by this. I have to say I was pretty surprised by that. Not that Mikael Williams was working the outside linebacker. That's what we would have expected. But in the case of Joseph Jones-Ajanye doing that, to me, that's not quite what I would have expected for him. In fact, I would have assumed that Mikael's move to outside linebacker was creating the opportunity for more playing time at Mikael's old position, defensive end, for a guy like Joseph Jones-Ajanye. So there's a part of me that has to admit, I'm not really quite so sure what to make of JJA, Joseph Jones-Ajanye, working at OLB, outside linebacker. That's not quite what I've expected. I think the simplest takeaway, though, even though this is a big dude and Connor says noticeable size for someone who's just 17, I think it speaks to the overall level of athleticism that he possesses. This is even a consideration of what he might be able to do. And to sort of further that point, I loved one of the things that Zion Logue said the other day. When Logue worked out as a part of Georgia's Pro Day, Logue also met with reporters. And in the midst of that discussion, was talking about some of what's left behind at Georgia as he now moves on to the NFL. And one of the names on his mind was Joseph Jones-Ajanye. And in the final days of Zion as a Georgia player, the incoming five-star freshman apparently made a very sizable impression on Zion Logue. You'll love this. This goes back to last week. Take a look.
He surprised me during bowl prep. Just some pass rush things that, like, being 17 years old, man, just like he has a motor for days. And once he finally gets his college weight and gets to moving around, he's gonna be good.
So I love that, because I mean, I think Zion Logue is a guy whose opinion really matters to me, because I like the way that he played there at UGA, and he's saying some very nice things about Joseph Jones-Ajanye, and we kind of add that into the intrigue of, you know, could he really be an edge rusher, kind of playing in a stand-up situation? You know, I don't quite know ultimately what the future holds for him on the football field, but I would say that it also kind of speaks to the overall, I think, the position value in the eyes of some players, that just sort of more fun to be an edge rusher. It's more fun to be an outside linebacker. You know, sometimes the defensive end spot sort of feels like you're doing a little dirty work. You know, you're kind of getting your hands dirty a little bit. You're getting down there and you're sort of being a more of a blue-collar, lunch-pail guy. And, you know, maybe for Georgia here this year defensively, there's a little bit of a chance to kind of recast that or perhaps, you know, reframe that a little bit, because ultimately I think one of the things that caused Georgia some trouble with a year ago was when they were having a hard time setting the edge defensively for whatever reason. People have kind of trying to diagnose that what that was. When they were having a little bit of a hard time, you know, stopping those rushing yards, you know, kind of on the outside there, it created a situation where Georgia up front defensively was perhaps more vulnerable than it's been at any other point in time, certainly in the recent years of the Kirby Smart era. And you get the sense that that's one of those things that Georgia wants to kind of shore up here as you move into 2024. And whoever's left over at defensive end, if Mikel's playing some outside linebacker, it sounds like Joseph Jonah Ajani would like to do that too. Whoever's kind of still playing defensive end, the role they could play in helping Georgia stop the run could make the defensive end position really important for Georgia once again. And with that in mind, I want to go back to Zion Logue here for a minute, because in talking about the way that he's presenting himself to NFL scouts right now, he used a really interesting description. He was talking about his own ability as a run stopper. Now, Logue plays in the middle of the defense. He's not a defensive end. But the overall idea here, I think, still holds up pretty well of, listen, I want to show myself as a run stopper, and if we're really good at stopping the run, then good things can happen for Georgia. I love the way that Logue described this last week, and I think it fits in really well with the conversation we're having right now. So let's see Zion Logue one more time here.
I'm stopping the run. I know if I stop the run, we can have some fun on third down. And when I came in, Coach Scott, he told me that was going to be the biggest building block that I needed, in which I did. So, and when I turned that on, my game kind of flourished.
I love that phrase from Logue. He says, listen, if we'll stop the run, we can all have some fun on third down. And that's ultimately what's about, right? And, you know, like, why does Mikel Williams want to play outside linebacker? In simple terms, it just seems like a more fun position to play. Perhaps the NFL pays that position better, too, I guess. But it just sort of seems like more fun to play. Why would Joseph Jonah Janye want to kind of stand up and go play over there, too? Maybe to him, it just sort of seems like it's more fun to play. Or maybe, you know, it's the Georgia coaching staff who thinks JJA is fun in that role. Either way, sometimes it just sort of seems more fun to stand up, be the edge rusher, than to put that hand on the turf and be the defensive end. But if you can take care of your business stopping the run on first down and second down, then everybody can have more fun on third down because you have a chance to get the quarterback a little bit more. The perfect example was that in 2021 when Georgia had 49 sacks on its way to a national championship season led by a defense that rightly is in the discussion for being the greatest of all time. And part of what made that defense so great is they were impenetrable against the run on first and second down and made third down a lot more fun for everybody, fun for them to play, fun for us to watch. So the bottom line here is I do get why there's a gravitational pull towards an edge rush position or any spot on the football field that seems a little sexier and seems a little bit more fun. I get all of that. But Zion Logue's words, I think, are pretty wise, even though it's only a short sentence. That, listen, if we'll stop the run on first and second down, there's plenty of fun for everybody to have on third down, regardless of whatever position you happen to be playing. And that is Around the Doghouse here today, poured by our friends at Dr. Pepper. Now, I'm like a lot of y'all in the fact that my weekends, I'm running around all over the place. My daughter's got gymnastics, my son's got baseball, and I love every step of every minute of it, right? It's like all the country songs say, you gotta enjoy every second of it, and I'm trying my best to do that. But I'm also worn out going from place to place to place. So you better believe my little pick-me-up and my little kind of, I guess, treat to myself in the middle of doing all of that is the great tasting, one-of-a-kind flavor of Dr. Pepper. I am enjoying that every single time I'm out there going and doing anything, because that is what Dr. Pepper is for me. So go to your local Kroger, be like me, go wherever it is you're shopping for groceries and pick up that same great flavor that I'm enjoying all the time, the rich, one-of-a-kind flavor of Dr. Pepper. In fact, there's 23 different flavors in a Dr. Pepper. That's why you saw in the can there a moment ago. See that number 23 right there? That's what that means. And knowing that, knowing with the 23 flavors, that is a pepper thing. So make sure you enjoy some Dr. Pepper like I do each and every day. And, of course, it's great to have Dr. Pepper as a part of Around the Doghouse here today. All right, we've got a lot to do on our program today. Before we're done, that we'll do this coming up in just a few minutes. I've got a special invitation to you. Now, this is going to be a haphazard mess. I make no promises about the efficiency of this, but I do want to try to have some fun in kind of a laid-back, casual way. So I'll tell you more about that here coming up in just a little bit. For now, though, on everything as it relates to Georgia spring practice, what's going on, what's going down, let's cover all of those bases and more. Welcome in John Stinchcomb today, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
At Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Always great to have John Stinchcomb here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. His insight always so valuable. Seeing him on video these days has been really fun, too. He's always sitting behind his, like, what's the Ron Burgundy line? Leather-bound books, rich mahogany. There's such a stateliness to John's desk that he shows up with each and every week, which is befitting of the former All-American and certainly a very classy guy. So, John, good morning to you. Thanks for being on the program today. We hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. This is the closest I can get to having an in-studio look. I try to put footballs, some Georgia stuff, make it feel appropriate.
I love that. We were just talking a moment ago about so Mikael Williams kind of cross-training at defensive and outside linebacker. We sort of expected that. Joseph Jonah-Jonye apparently doing some of the same kind of thing there. And maybe I'm reading into this a little bit, but it speaks to me, John, there aren't just some positions that are sort of thought of as the fun positions, and there's some positions that are sort of thought of as the blue collar, you know, sort of lunch pail, you know, sort of working class positions. And, you know, unfortunately, football team, you got to have 11 guys all playing the same, you know, level of commitment. And so you got to have guys do the hard work. And in a 3-4 defense, the defensive end spot is sort of that hard work position. Perhaps there's not as much glory. Now, you can be the number one overall pick, as Trayvon Walker proved in the 2022 NFL draft. But am I on the right page with this, that one of the challenges the football coaches always have are guys want to gravitate towards what seems like the sexier spot and perhaps away from the position that provides a little less individual glory? Is that why we're seeing some of this, you know, cross-training going on, or is this simply a matter of, you know, getting guys in the place where they can be perhaps the most impactful?
I think it's the latter more than the prior. I think for a guy like Mikael, it's how can we get him on the field more? And you look at the way defenses, just like offense has, there's an evolution that has occurred, and you see so much more versatility from the defense, specifically with Georgia. Yeah, you're looking at a transition from that space between the guard and the tackle to outside the tackle's edge, and the way Georgia plays it with their three down front, it gives that outside edge player more versatility. Can he be in space? Yes. Can he rush the passer? Yes. Can he set the edge? Yes. And the ask is to be able to do that, not only from a three-point stance, but also from a two-point stance, from off the ball. The ask is a little more dynamic than what we've seen in years past. I've tried to do a little bit of a film study to understand better what Georgia does defensively, to understand their adjustments in coverage, to understand the ask for particular players. And the edge player, it's almost a misnomer to define them as just outside linebackers or just defensive ends. Their roles cross between the two, the ask of which and the demand at which they have to play. They have to be able to, you know, cover in the curl flats area, and they also have to be able to set the edge when flow comes their way. So I think this gives them an opportunity to get more dynamic playmakers on the field for extended periods of time. As Zion was talking about, you earn the opportunities to rush the passers in clear passing situations. Obviously, third and long is one of those situations. But being able to play with a three down front means that outside linebacker, that edge player, still has to be a factor in the run game. So when you've cross-trained guys, when guys have trained in that more traditional defensive end from a three-down front position, they understand the importance of being a factor in the run game and how that factors into their ability to get in more advantageous situations to get after the passer.
Yeah, I loved the way that Zion Logue said that in the clip we just played, because I think it really kind of sums it up in a very appropriate way. You know, Georgia probably took a little bit of a step back with its rush defense this past season. They were kind of, you know, at like 20th or something in like yards per rushing attempt, which is for Georgia is a disaster. That's still, you know, probably 89th percentile in America or 80 something percentile in America. But for Georgia, that's, you know, not where you want to be. And you and I believe talked about that last week. And so part of the motivation here is, A, it's just, you know, good to stop the run. But if you can, as you said, sort of force those obvious passing situations on third down, well, now everybody, to a certain extent, can kind of pin their ears back a little bit more. You can be much more aggressive on third down. And that is, I would just say, objectively speaking, a more fun brand of football. It's sort of, to me, like what Georgia looked like in 2021 when the typically sound Georgia defense also had by far and away the most dynamic pass rush of any point in time in the Kirby Smart era. And John, you know, from my standpoint, it's not a coincidence that was, you know, not just the best defense in Georgia history, it was one of the best defenses in college football history, because they were pairing up the, you know, the certainty of stopping the run with the dynamic play of, and we can also get after the quarterback as well.
Yeah, and it starts with being able to stop the run. I think case in point was this past year's SEC championship game. There were times where I think everyone in that stadium knew Alabama was trying to run the football, and the challenge was on Georgia to stop the run, get the ball back into the offense's hands. And Alabama liked that matchup. And that's not a situation that Georgia finds itself in often, is an opponent, whether offensively or defensively, is looking at a position group or a style of football and says, we've got the advantage here. I think that was the case, humbly and regrettably so, that Alabama lined it up and said, you know what? Everyone in the stadium knows we need to, especially late in the game, we're gonna run the ball to seal this win for them. And they were able to do it. So it's a rarity to have guys like Jalen Carter and Trayvon Walker and Jordan Davis, guys that have earned the opportunity to take away aspects of an opponent's offensive attack. And that starts with eliminating the run game. Only in, you know, blowouts is it, the offense can take a team out of the run game. In those big games where it's the heavyweight matches, the teams that we plan to play against in late season play, you're going to have to do that, dictate that with your personnel groupings, not just the fact that, you know, overall you're just a better team. And what we saw this past year is, you know what, this is an area that Georgia can improve. And it sounds like, you know, they continue to bring in the right pieces to be a factor there, but it certainly is a point of emphasis of trying to get the right guys on the field so that they can earn those opportunities to get after the passer.
I want to talk to you more about spring practice here for a moment and the position that you would know better than any other along the offensive line. It seems like right now Georgia is rock solid with its left tackle, Ernest Green. I think he's a really good player. It seems like Jared Wilson, sort of the guy at center right now, the work he's been doing over the course of last year appears to have earned that opportunity for him. And then when you look at, you know, Tate Ratledge back, he's obviously your right guard, which leaves two positions that I think are pretty interesting. Let me start with left guard here for a moment, where it seems like there's going to be a pretty intense competition ongoing between Dylan Fairchild and Micah Morris. Now, Georgia's probably also going to play both those guys, I would guess, a lot during the season, because Georgia's rotated a pretty good bit along the offensive line last couple of years. But I like Dylan Fairchild as a lot as a player, and yet there's also plenty of reason to believe that Micah Morris is a pretty promising prospect too. You have any thought on that competition right now between Morris and Fairchild there at left guard? Because it seems like, I mean, I don't want to overstate this, but it seems like to me Georgia's got two starter-level players, but obviously at that position you can only play one at a time.
I agree. I think they're both starting caliber. I think they're SEC quality interior offensive linemen. Now, their games are distinctly different. Micah Morris is arguably the strongest football player. I don't know what he looks like in the weight room. I know what he looks like on a football field, and he can straight up maul folks. I mean, he can move people, heavy, big bodies, interior, move them off the ball. Now, Fairchild, a little more of a hybrid, effective in the run game, but also probably more athletic, moves well in pass situations. I don't know what he graded at in pass percentage wise, but it had to be pretty high up there. So I think he's probably a little more polished than Micah is, but Micah's got that raw power that very few players possess. So when you're able to sharpen two guys in different ways, and that competition lets them compete for the very best, I think that really bodes well for Georgia. I think either you'd feel confident with either taking the field, obviously with the development of Ernest Green over this past year on the field. I expect him to continue to get better as a player, to understand what his strengths and weaknesses are, and just play more confident at times. I thought, you know, later in the season, you saw a much better player just because he was less hesitant. He felt it looked like he was playing with that confidence that comes with reps. And I would expect him to only get better. So continuing in a long line of highly talented offensive linemen that Georgia produces, I think part of that comes with the competition that exists and the ability for them not only to compete with the high level and high quantity of great players on that defensive front, but also in that same room of having guys that can push you and understand that your starting position is not a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I put the right tackle spot with that in mind there as well, where it seems like Xavier Truss, he's obviously the veteran. I think you've praised Truss before in this space, is going to get that first look there at right tackle. But there's also this thought that, like, you know, Monroe Freeland could be ready to make a pretty big move here. And it seems like some of the reviews in terms of how Freeland's performed during practice and, you know, perhaps when he's, you know, played have been pretty good as well. You know, what do you make of the battle between the veteran, who we've all seen plenty of at a couple of different spots, and a guy like Freeland, who perhaps a lot of Georgia fans, I probably put myself in this category too, kind of hungry to see a little more of? What do you make of the Freeland-Truss battle at right tackle right now?
Yeah, I would say Monroe Freeling's ceiling is higher than Xavier Truss. And the question is, where is he in his development? And it's a challenge because Xavier Truss is a guy who's been in every fire that there could possibly be. He's played across the board. He's been that versatile piece that Georgia continues to put out across the offensive line. Guys that are able to move from inside to outside, and do so in a way that's effective and you don't see a huge drop off in play. I do think that, you know, there's a little bit of a ceiling with Xavier, that there's opportunity for other guys that maybe have a little more body control and athleticism to compete for that space that he fills at times. But, you know, I'm not bashing on the guy. He plays at a high level. He's done so for a long time. I think it's the better question is, how far along is Monroe in his development? I think we saw, you know, there was athleticism, there's movement skills. The question is, has he continued to fill out that frame, and is he ready to play in, play out, week in, week out, every Saturday, compete at the very best that this nation has to throw at an offense? Is he there now? Is he already at that space to push Xavier Truss and give Georgia that flexibility to have now seven guys that are starter caliber, and you're just finding the very best five and knowing that, you know, it's a war of attrition. As many games as these guys play in a season, it's very unlikely that starting five that starts week one is going to remain all season long unscathed, and you're not going to have a need for that sixth, seventh, and sometimes eighth guy to be ready to step up and not have a drop off in play.
And then one more thing about spring practice here right now is the way in which obviously we knew the transfer wide receivers for Georgia going to be in the spotlight a little bit. It seems like the guy generating the most buzz right now might be Colby Young. Obviously, that's their size there, the ability to make those contested catches. Like, how important is it for Georgia to kind of find, whether it be Young, who seems to be the dude that's sort of generating the most buzz right now, or a guy like Humphreys who's played in the SEC, or just somebody, how important is it for Georgia to kind of bring in one of those transfer players and make him an impact contributor to go along with the guys who were transfers a year ago that have now been here for a full year, and Anthony Evans and everything else? How important is finding somebody to make a big contribution from that collection of transfer receivers for Georgia in the offense here this year?
Yeah, I think what you're looking at now is how can we utilize their individual skills? They were brought here for a reason. I think that's the beauty of the transfer portal, is you can look at a player's skill set, what they were able to do at a collegiate level, highly competitive for both those individuals' teams, or at least the competition that they've seen, and say, how does that fit in what we have? What Georgia has done really across the board, wide receiver room is no exception, is they deploy a number of players. It's not the same three, you know, X receiver, Z receiver, slot receiver that you see every drive. You see a mix. So finding the guys that can stretch the field, finding the guys that can make plays across the middle and those yards after the catch. I mean, there is a different skill set that you got from a guy like A.D. Mitchell or George Pickens than you did a Ladd McConkey. And so understanding how they complement one another, you know, for the layman on the outside, you look and you say, oh, they're wide receivers. But understanding the game and what you need and how they complement each other as to, you know, the route tree and what they can do, that matters. And so I think what you're looking at is what's the best deployment and how can we utilize these guys' skills in space. Dylan Bell's another guy that, you know, last year they were figuring out ways to get him the ball. He obviously bailed out Georgia's team at times with injuries at the running back position, but it also kind of allowed him to say, hey, I'm a guy, you get the ball in my hands and I can be a dynamic playmaker. So this spring ball is important for a number of positions. Wide receiver room is no exception. There's so many guys with high potential. It's what do we need to do to put them in positions to succeed and how do they fit the system that we want to have in place come August?
No, I think that's really interesting. I want to finish with this. We talked before you joined us today about one of the recruiting battles that's out there for Georgia right now involving David Sanders. Big time offensive line prospect. Seems like this is one of those that Georgia's obviously gotten very used to winning, but obviously wants to win for this cycle there as well. And in particular, the thing about interesting about Sanders right now is recently seeing Clemson practice, saw Matt Luke. That's a guy that you obviously know very well. Georgia fans all sort of feel like they know Luke pretty well. This past weekend, got a chance to see Stacy Searles there as well. So, John, I want you to put yourself, if you don't mind, in the position of a guy like Sanders right now. If you're watching Luke and then watching Searles, what do you think the contrast between those two coaches might be for a recruit like this that could really sort of swing the balance of momentum for the Georgia class if he were to choose Georgia over a program like Clemson that's currently recruiting him very, very hard?
Yeah, I think both are truly talented, some of the best offensive line coaches in the country. Having seen the product that they both put on the field and kind of understood their backstory and where they've been, the development of players, I think very highly of Matt Luke. And I think one of the biggest advantages for Coach Searles is the product that has been put in the field, on the field, and the streak that Georgia has of producing and developing offensive linemen. Matt Luke has been a part of that. The difference is, you know, he's now at a program in Clemson that does not have, have they jumped the shark? Are they still relevant in the national scene? Whereas Georgia, that's obviously not a question. The practice that you get, the development of players, it's second to none. And offensive line is certainly not an exception in that space. I think very highly of Coach Searles. I think of the job that he has done of not only, you know, that's a big shoes to fill coming after Pittman and Luke and returning to a team that you have some familiarity, but the bar has been raised since you've left. And what they were able to do last year was a good product and the number one recruiter, right? I mean, how do you recruit guys? You show them what you do. You show them the development for the other players. And for a guy like Sanders, I think you look at an Ernest Green, you look at a Monroe Freeling, you look at Dylan Fairchild and some of these younger guys and say, man, they've really progressed. And I would expect more of the same come this season. So on the recruiting trail, it obviously matters who is running the show, especially in your position group. And both are great. And then as you look outward, the Georgia program, in my opinion, is in a different space as Clemson. So an easier recruiting chip to fall in that plate when you're trying to compare apples to apples.
John, I love it. Great insight. I appreciate that as always. So good to have you here as a part of Dog Nation Daily here today. Have a great week. We'll look forward to having you back here on the program again very soon there as well.
I always appreciate it, BA. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs too, John.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, love John Stinchcomb. Love his insight on all that. Great to have him as a part of the program today. Hey, I've got something fun for all of you here in a moment. An invitation for you to be a part of something. Will it go perfect? Probably not. Will it be fun? Hopefully so. That's the reason why we're doing it. I'm going to tell you more about it here coming up in just a little bit. To set all that up, though, let me remind you that we're cruising around the SEC right now, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. It means Dog Nation Cruise is getting close, just a few days away, a couple of weeks away, on board Allure of the Seas, having a great time on an Oasis class ship. And as you hear me talk about that, my invitation to you is to keep in mind that a brand new Oasis class ship is going to debut in the month of July. It's going to be called Utopia of the Seas. It's a brand new Oasis class cruise ship sailing right there out of Port Canaveral, just like Allure of the Sea is going to do for us. Let me tell you why that matters. It's because I live here in the Atlanta area. Many of you do as well. And when I'm looking to cruise, typically speaking, I'm going to be cruising out of Port Canaveral because it's really easy to get to. I like the convenience of a cruise vacation with Royal Caribbean. I like the fact that I can hop in the car and drive down and sort of be there. Now, back in January, did fly to Miami to be on Icon of the Seas, which was really great too. But typically speaking, I'm thinking about how do I get the maximum use out of my time? And that's one of the things that's cool about Allure of the Seas right now. And it's really the reason we selected it as the cruise ship with Royal Caribbean for our Dog Nation cruise here for 2024, because it's easy to get to right there at Port Canaveral. You just hop in the car, you drive past Orlando, you're essentially, you know, right there at Port Canaveral where the ship sails from. Always really convenient. And if you're kind of thinking about that as a good sort of port of embarkation for you, Utopia of the Seas in July, the same kind of fun we're having on our own Oasis class ship, Allure of the Seas of the Dog Nation cruise, you can have that on a brand new cruise ship there starting in July. So check out Jessica Slater. She's a travel agent who was kind of introduced to us by Royal Caribbean, because Jessica has a lot of intimate knowledge of Royal Caribbean, which means she can make your Royal Caribbean cruise vacation all the more enjoyable. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. She can tell you everything you need to know. All right, couple of things here. NCAA tournament field announced yesterday. Couple of thoughts for me on this, just generally. We don't do a ton of basketball talk, so I'm not going to pretend to be Joe Lunardi here for a moment. But I do think, from an SEC-centric standpoint, the most interesting thing with the upcoming NCAA tournament, you know, what does Tennessee do? Knocked out of the SEC tournament right there at the very beginning. Rick Barnes historically has had his issues there in March. Tennessee, as an athletic department, seems to have its issues in all sports, in games that matter, in chances to move on in advance. So we'll see if Barnes, you know, has a tough time there with this here once again. This team's been fun to watch. The transfer they took in, Kinect, has been obviously an amazing player in the SEC here this year. But seeing can they actually make something happen in March, that's going to be fascinating. If that's true for Tennessee, it's even more true for John Calipari, whose relationship with Kentucky fans just seems to be standing on thin ice a little bit. This is a guy who's been, you know, eliminated early from way too many NCAA tournaments as of late. Certainly for a place like Kentucky that expects to win, they're just not doing nearly enough of that. I believe that Kentucky plays in this tournament with a great deal of pressure. That's also true for one of the one seeds, Purdue. You know that. They've been knocked out by kind of bottom-feeding seeds now 3 years in a row. They're obviously trying to avoid that here this year. I think it sets up to be a pretty interesting NCAA tournament overall. There's obviously a lot of chatter about you know, a team like Indiana State being kept out of the bracket in favor of a program like Virginia. This is just what the committee does. They put in the power teams. And if you're not quite the power team, you're just not going to make it, whether that be Indiana State or even a Big East team like Seton Hall, which probably has better wins than, you know, some of these other teams. But it's still just Seton Hall. Pretty easy for this committee, operating as they typically do, to exclude a team like that. We also talked last week about Trev Alberts leaving Nebraska to go to Texas A&M. Kind of a high-profile, you know, departure from your alma mater to go take some money from A&M. And lo and behold, you've got A&M playing Nebraska in the men's tournament. And you've also got A&M playing in Nebraska in the women's tournament, which gives you an idea that the committee certainly has some fun with the matchups that it puts together. It tries to pretend that it doesn't, but we deep down always know that is the case. There was also the weird thing this week about Greg Sankey being interviewed by, I believe it was The Athletic, kind of hinting at the idea that one day they may break away and do their own sort of power conference only basketball tournament. I can't tell you how distasteful I find this to be. And it's not because I think that you shouldn't go after the money or whatever else. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm certainly in favor of free markets and things like that. I just think it's really, really short-sighted to think that you can create a tournament that would function better than this tournament does. Complex systems are incredibly difficult to understand sometimes. And there is a level of popularity about the NCAA tournament that can't be easily explained by any one thing. It's not just the brackets, although that plays a big part of it. It's not just because a lot of different people, no matter where you went to school, feel like you've got some sort of stake in all of this, although that's certainly a part of it. And, you know, to sort of flippantly say, oh, we feel like we can, you know, go do this better, or at least hint that you might be able to, I just think that speaks to a level of arrogance that I find really problematic about Greg Sankey here right now. I openly root for Sankey because I'm an SEC homer. I also think there have been a lot of moments in the past where Greg Sankey's proven himself to be a very capable commissioner and probably the person best suited overall to be the leader of college athletics into the future. But when you're saying things like this at a time in which the entirety of college athletics, the foundation upon which it rests, is so uncertain and unstable, to me, you're demonstrating that you might not exactly know what time it is right now. And I think that's pretty concerning. Greg Sankey's words overall, you know, a little concerning for me that you're thinking about this at a time in which college athletics, as we know it, needs to be saved. Sankey, probably best position of anyone to be the person to save it. But it's not obvious that he wants to right now. He seems to be worried about other things. Now, on a much happier note, let me say this. We haven't done this in a good number of years. And this isn't a clever idea. This isn't a new spin on this. This is just something I want to do. And I think we have a graphic that we can throw on this screen here about this, I believe. We're going to do a Dog Nation Daily Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. Why am I going to call it the Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge? Because I'm going to kind of update this during the Golden Shoe time of the show. Now, you can see by the quality of this graphic that this is not something we put a whole lot of work into. I made the graphic, so I have to take the take the L for this. It's not a very fancy graphic, which gives you an idea. The entirety of this is going to be very, very laid back. There is no sort of like, you know, interesting twist on this. This isn't Warren Buffett giving away $1 billion or anything like that. In fact, this is all just for fun. But if you would like to be a part of a bracket challenge with us here on Dog Nation Daily, here's what I want you to do. I want you to send your name, your email, your mailing address, and your phone number to me, brandon.adams@dognation.com. So you can tell by the graphic, this is not like, you know, some fancy thing. I don't have 1,000 people helping me out with this. I'm just going to do this myself. Now you may say, well, BA, why do I have to give you all that stuff? For a few reasons. First of all, we're going to have a couple of different prizes that I'm going to tell you about. One of these is going to be, I'm going to invite the winner of the bracket challenge to come onto the show and celebrate being, for a couple of minutes, celebrate being the winner. So I need a way of contacting for that. I'm also going to try to give out a few other prizes there as well, which I'm going to need your mailing address to be able to send you. So send me your name, send me your email, send me your mailing address, your phone number to my email address, brandon.adams@dognation.com. This is going to be a haphazard mess because I'm running this myself, but I do think it can be fun. We haven't done this in a few years, and I want you to be a part of this. And if you win, you can come on the show. And I'm going to try to give out a few other prizes there as well. So this is probably the sloppiest bracket challenge of any media company running one. I can promise you that none will be more sloppily executed than this one will be. But I do believe it'll be fun. I'm going to try to give away some prizes. All of this of my own doing here. This is just something we're doing for fun. There's no money involved. I don't have any money to give you. There's no money involved, but it is going to be fun. And I do, sure enough, would love to have you be a part of this. And so send me your contact information. I'll be reaching out to you, and I'm going to get you involved in our bracket challenge here. And whoever wins, I'm going to bring in the show, and you can do a couple of minutes of taking a bow for your college basketball knowledge. Does that make sense? So one more time. My email address, brandon.adams@dognation.com. Send me your name, your email, your mailing address, your phone number. I'm going to try to get you some good prizes here for all of this, or at least a prize for all of this, and we'll get you involved and help have some fun here as a part of our Dog Nation Daily Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. Hope you'll be a part of all of that. Let me also squeeze in a couple of other things real quickly there as well. We did get the 14-team playoff finalized. The only thing I thought was kind of interesting about this is, and I don't know enough to say this, you know, necessarily full-throatedly, but it seems like the expansion of the 14-team playoff, the additional inventory, it seems like that didn't come with a whole lot of extra money. Like, I find that to be kind of interesting that supposedly everything in college football today is about money and you're going to do what makes you more money. But isn't it interesting that some of the moves now don't seem to be bringing a lot more on sort of a per game value from ESPN, who for whatever reason college football has decided they want to be the lone media partner in all of this? Doesn't that seem interesting? At least it does to me that you know you're pushing for more and more money, and yet it seems like the actual financial return on some of these very, very radical changes is not quite producing what it maybe once would have. So there you go. On that, we'll follow that, make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, before we're done, I got some good news, I got some bad news as it relates to UGA athletics. And perhaps we should have put air quotes around good news. You may be aware that Georgia has made the postseason for the first time, I believe, what's this, 2017? Georgia will play in the NIT. In fact, not only will they play, they'll host a game in Stegman Coliseum against Xavier. I'm led to believe the reason for this is, dude, by the way, we got a nice video coming in from the SEC basketball tournament. This is pretty good video here for a topic about Georgia hosting Xavier in the NIT that took place because Ole Miss decided they didn't want to. So Ole Miss had the chance, they didn't want to, and now Georgia's like, okay, we'll take it, we'll go to the NIT, which in a roundabout way, if I were to put the most positive spin on this at all, and I do think if you're a Georgia fan right now, it is very, very fair to ask, where do things stand with this Georgia basketball team? And are they set up in any way to be better next year? Not just better, but much better than they were here this year. I guess the lone positive you can take from this, at least they want to play, right? It's like if these are a bunch of sort of transfer guys who are already sort of on to the next thing, then maybe sticking around and being a part of this, maybe that just wouldn't make much sense to them. The fact that they want to play in the game, apparently they do, more so than Ole Miss anyway, that's at least worth something, I guess. I'm not going to try to oversell this, but Georgia will be playing postseason basketball for the first time in quite some time. Also, when I was a kid, some of you remember this, Georgia used to hang NIT banners. One of the coaches, I think it was Tubby, was like, we're not hanging banners with the NIT anymore, which is probably the right thing to do. And they haven't done that ever since. But there you go. So Georgia back in the NIT tournament. On the other side of that, much, much worse news for the Georgia baseball team. And we said this over and over again. Now, you can't put the blame for this on us. We said over and over again that stepping into SEC play was going to be a major step up in weight class. I think that Georgia would get pounded three times by Kentucky. No, I guess I probably didn't. But rough weekend for the Diamond Dogs up there in Lexington. Hard time throwing strikes. Gave up too many runs. Had the 4-0 lead on Friday, and it was just all Wildcats the rest of the way there. So tough start to a SEC slate there for Georgia. Honesty compels you to admit. But that is the story for UGA Athletics after kind of a weekend where you've got a lot of different teams involved. Now, softball team doing much better, so we'll give them credit. Beating Alabama, I think. But listen, not a great time for the Georgia baseball team, but the basketball team is at least going to the NIT. And as we wrap up here today, a very interesting Golden Shoe. Now, this is a serious situation. I don't want to make too light of this, but obviously some Georgia students apparently did some very good things. Lucy Bowers-Boykin, who's in our audience on a regular basis, she shared this with me, and I want to share this with all of you. So Lucy says, this was like 10 to 15 minutes from where I live, and John Bateman, who obviously works at Georgia, put this out that so proud of these amazing young ladies of the UGA Kappa Alpha Theta sorority, five incredible heroes. What the Burke County Sheriff's Department puts out was the amazing students of the University of Georgia who courageously saved lives during a recent car crash. Young women observed a white SUV leave the roadway and roll over to the creek at Ellison Bridge Road. They quickly turned around, went to the crash site, and without hesitation jumped in the water and pulled the driver and two children out of the vehicle. That is, as described by the Sheriff's Department here, quick thinking and bravery. Indeed, that's the case. Lucy, thanks for sharing with me. And how about these Georgia students? Man, doing an amazing thing that obviously will impact lives for the rest of their lives. What a cool thing here. And John Bateman obviously made everybody aware of that. So we'll give Golden Shoes all away around there. Scary situation that turns out to be kind of a happy ending, I guess. So there you go. Lousy stinking Gators, our Gator hater updater. Florida does make the NCAA tournament, but just like football, we don't think they'll actually win anything as a part of it. 1,227 days, that's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia in football. That's the number that matters. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.